All right. I'm going to do a, not going to read the verses, but I'm going to do a, just a quick recap because we did forget to turn this on. We're talking about tabernacling with God, and I think that it's an important theme, God tabernacling with his people, and how Genesis is chronological, Exodus is chronological, up until 24. They go up on the mountain, and Moses comes down and sees the people with their party going on, and the golden calf. But it doesn't get to that until chapter 32. Instead, it talks about what we're going to read in Exodus 25, where he tells them to make him a tabernacle so that he can dwell with him. Gives them some specifics, we read, of things that they were supposed to do. And maybe one of the sermons, I don't know, I'm not going to tell them what to do, but you know, I know Johnny has given some stuff for us in Knoxville locally because he's a master jeweler. He works with this stuff. When he talks about making the breastplate, I don't know what he thinks, but he's probably thinking about, man, what a job. You know? But he's talked about refining gold and different things and what's involved. I know when I picture somebody doing it, it's completely, I don't know how you would do it. He probably thinks of how you would do it. But this stuff is interesting to me. I look at it. I got a book from a fellow I know, Chaim Richman, and he's the director of the Temple Institute. They built a lot of these things, and it's full of pictures of all the stuff that they have. But let's look in verse 10, Exodus 25, verse 10, because instead of getting into how unfaithful his wife was, it gets into, I'm going to live with you, I'm going to tabernacle with you. And I think that this is a theme that runs through the entire Bible, from strolling in the garden with Adam and Eve, to where we read in Revelation 21 about him moving his kingdom from heaven and tabernacling with us on the earth. Literally from the beginning to the end. And to me, that's an awesome thing. You know, I see, every once in a while, you'll see something on TV, or there's a Steve Martin movie. We've got that on DVD. I forget the name of it, but you know, he's a charlatan, itinerant preacher, and he runs around scamming people and raising money. But you know what? You hear the you see the flyers, and you hear the people talking. Oh, we're gonna twist the tail of the devil tonight. We're gonna have healings, and we're gonna have miracles happen. And you know, some people go to church to see this every week. You know, I think, man, if God ever did show up and they had his presence there, when you read in the Bible what happens, and like with the high priest, what the high priest would go through to enter the Holy of Holies on Day of Atonement, we read through some of that up in Knoxville, and you know, sometimes they'd end up dragging him out of there by a rope tied on the end of his foot because he's knocked over dead. I think if God would have his presence there with them like they're claiming it is, some of them just might fall over dead, you know. I don't think he'd really walk up to them and say, hey bro, how's it going? How you been? You know, we've been taking care of things while you've been gone, you know. Ain't we doing such a great job? You know, it's, you don't want to be like you're attending a funeral, because it says that we're supposed to go out and celebrate, and you know, wherever two or three are gathered together, there he is in the midst of us. And I'm not undermining that. I'm just saying that sometimes you can have a good time, but you know, there is an element of respect there. And this element of respect isn't always a disciplinary type element. It's one of the things I want to bring out. Sometimes it's respect, like a husband shows his wife, like a wife shows her husband. A deep, abiding, loving respect. You know, husbands and wives can have a great time together with their family. You know, if dad's only the disciplinarian, there's something wrong in that family, you know, I mean, it's not right. God can't only be looked at as the disciplinarian. He wants to be looked at as our loving father, but sometimes he has to correct us, but because it's because he loves us so much, He wants us to grow up to be something. So let's look at Exodus 25:10. I want to start out with what he tells them to do, and then I'm going to ask you a question about it. Because it really doesn't make sense. Exodus 25:10 says, and they shall... See, he says in verse 9, he says, according to all I show you, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishing, just so you shall make it. So he shows Moses the pattern, and he gets into telling him to build it. And they shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, 1.5 cubits its width, 1.5 cubits its height. And you shall overlay it with pure gold, inside and out. You shall overlay it and make on it a molding of gold all around. And you shall cast 4 rings of gold for it and put it on its 4 corners. 2 rings shall be on one side and 2 rings on the other side. And you shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark, and the ark may be carried by them. The poles shall be in the rings of the ark, and they shall not be taken from it. And you shall put into the ark of the testimony which I will give you. And you shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits its width. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold, of hammered work. You shall make them at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. Make 1 cherubim at one end and 1 cherub at the other end, and you shall make the cherubim at the 2 ends of it of 1 piece with the mercy seat. And the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and they shall face one another. The faces of the cherubim shall be towards the mercy seat. You shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I will give you. And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony, about everything which I give you in the commandment to the children of Israel. All right. Now, I used to read through this and just kind of do the Evelyn Woods speed reading and, you know, just kind of zzz, until I get to something that I thought was kind of interesting. Let me ask you a few questions about this. Anybody grow up in a house where Dad had a chair, and that was Dad's chair? Anybody? What would happen to you if you were sitting in Dad's chair? Mike says he wouldn't be here today. It was like, get out of there, that's Dad's chair. Anybody ever build a house or be involved in a house being built or, you know, planning, even if you didn't build your house yet, someday you have a house you want to build, you've been involved in the planning of building a house. Anybody? When you think about building a house, how do you start planning? What do you start doing? I mean, different people think of different things. It depends on who you are. I know my son-in-law is a contractor. You know, I don't know what he thinks of first. He probably says, well, let me see the land it's going to be built on. You know, he wants to see what kind of house can we put here. But is the first thing when you build a house, does somebody show you a picture of Dad's chair and tell you to start with that? That's what it's doing here. It's our father's chair, how he appears between the people. He tells him that, you know, these are the materials that I want you to do. He's going to lay out some materials, and then he starts with the mercy seat. And it's like, it's not irrelevant because it was very specific on what he wanted done and how he wanted it done. But the only reason for all of the other stuff is to house his chair that he comes and sits on and spends time with his family. Now, I don't know about you, but the first time I started considering this from that aspect, it wasn't like I thought, well, okay, that's, you know, let's all go out and be Indiana Jones and let's find the Ark of the Covenant. Let's see. One guy says it's in Ethiopia. Another guy says it's, you know, in a cave and they found it. Another guy says it's under the t- tunnels that are, there's catacombs under the Temple Mount. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what he set up so that he could come, and literally when we're talking here, I don't believe it was the Father in the tabernacle. I think it was Christ, and I think Yeshua. That's why in the second temple, he wasn't there. Now, they will admit that his presence wasn't there. When it left, it's recorded in the Bible, when his presence left and it went up to the Mount of Olives and ascended up into heaven, it wasn't the first time Jesus had done that. When you read the Acts where he goes up, he says he's going to return in like manner. They had a temple, they had a structure, they had a Holy of Holies, there's no Ark of the Covenant, there's none of the other stuff. Is there, the room is empty. But he comes. See, this whole thing is he's spending time with us. It's easy to think of God up in heaven or Jesus up in heaven at the right hand of his Father and, you know, looking down. And those are the pictures that I got growing up, the little felt boards and, you know, and those, nothing wrong. I mean, those are stories and all the stories that teach us about the Bible when you're growing up and looking at. But that's how you think of him. Or at least that's how I would think of him. He's up in heaven looking down at us. Instead of, he's got this desire. I know sometimes people have a job that requires them to travel. Whether it's going to disaster areas or driving in a semi or traveling for business or whatever it is. You know, somehow it's just better if you can actually be home. But he starts with the furniture. Where he's going to dwell, in the heart of the tabernacle, and from there he builds out. If you go through the instructions and you look at it. First the furniture, then the tables, then the material for the tent, then the altar, then the priestly garments. You know, he works like that with us. We talk about, you know, using some of the analogies I've talked about before, not in others. I mean, I heard it and I just used it. I thought it was a good one. About fishing. When you go fishing, you don't pull out a breaded fillet with tartar sauce on it and it's ready to go, you know? First you catch a fish, and sometimes they're slimy, and sometimes it's, well, that one we gotta throw back. That's unclean. You know, it's just like that with people. There are a few bullheads and suckers, and, you know, and there are a few, you know, walleyes and, you know, whatever. I grew up in freshwater lakes. We didn't live on the ocean, so, I mean, walleyes and perch, and, I mean, those were the two best fish that I like the most, you know. But you don't, you know, every once in a while there's a catfish. And you gotta take that hook out without getting stung and throw it back in the water, or, you know, like catfish, throw it up on the ground. And but he starts like that with us. He starts with our heart. We don't come out all cleaned up. Now, sometimes he's got to stick his hand down in the septic tank that we're living in and feel around and grab a big, fat, juicy one and pull it out and then start to clean us up. I don't know about you, but that's kind of like I think my life was like. It was, you know, I was living in it. I had turned it into a septic tank. He cleans up the inside, and then sometimes the outside. You know, the outside is supposed to follow, but he starts with what's in the inside. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 23. Because as people, we think differently, at least I do. You think about the outside. When I think about a house, I don't think about, let's go shopping for some furniture, and then we'll figure out what kind of house we need. I know when I built my house, I looked with, and it's a work in progress, but, you know, when I got my half house, some of you have been there, I started out with, well, what do we got to have? We got to have a kitchen, and we got to have a living room, we got to have a bathroom, we got to have a couple bedrooms, and How can we get that out of this? Let's just start, you know, so it's just a different process. I didn't think about what furniture I had, and then I'm going to build my house around my furniture. And I think it's like that in everything we do, but I think it's the opposite in everything that God does. Matthew 23:25, Jesus says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and uncleanliness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. You know, sometimes people, I think, don't understand the context of what was going on here when Jesus said these words. You know, I admit that sometimes I get a little excited and I might go over the edge and say things that, you know, aren't politically correct, or, you know, sometimes I criticize where I really shouldn't criticize. But I never did this. I never walked up to a bunch of Catholic priests or a bunch of Baptist ministers or a bunch of whatever, you know, it's like going to Rome and seeing a bunch of Catholic priests outside the Vatican and walking up and say, you vipers, you snakes, you hypocrites. You know, when he tells them that they're inside, they're like dead man's bones. Literally, if you walked over a grave and there were bones because there was a grave, you were unclean. You had to go outside the camp for 7 days, and only the ashes of a red heifer could cleanse you after that. That was a very high degree of defilement. It wasn't like, well, you're unclean till evening and then you wash and, you know, then you're fine. It was like a really big, heavy insult. And it wasn't like he was trying to insult them, or he was telling them what he really thought of them. These were the respected leaders of their time. These were the, whatever your background is, whatever you go to church, wherever, here. It doesn't, you know. How dare you say that to these men? They have dedicated their lives to serving God. Well, at least that's the way it looked. They had on the right clothes. They had their priestly garments. And they were all prim and proper, and they had been schooled, and they had learned it in the law. And they had the people, they probably, most of them, really believed their own deal. You know, I'm sure there was a few charlatans, there always are, but most of them probably believed that they were doing the right thing. They went to the school of the prophets, they went to yeshiva, they went to, you know, they had been taught, I went to the school of Gamaliel. I went to school of Shemai, you know, I've got my degree, I've got my ordination. I've devoted my life. I've got Talmudim, I've got disciples, I've got followers. Wanna be priests and prophets are hanging around and asking me to study with them. They believe their own deal. When the Messiah came, they were expecting him. You can read about it. You can see that they are you the one? Everybody's out there, John the Baptist, are you the one? Or is there another like you? They knew it was time, but they actually believed that when he came, he'd come up to him and congratulate him and give him honor and blessings. You ever think about this? They were the right people in the right place with the right book, keeping the right day. And sometimes I look at what we do and how we argue over doctrine, and not that you're not supposed to study it and have opinions. You are. I mean, I got opinions. You know, one of the people I'm the closest to here is James. I mean, I love him like a brother. But there are some subjects that, you know, James and I, we just kind of avoid because he's got some very set beliefs. And I can get him going from 0 to 60 in less than 5 seconds, and he can do that to me. You know, he knows that I'm as pig-headed as he is on some of the things, and we each respect each other, but, you know, these were the guys, the right place, the right book, the right day, the right, you know, of course when he comes, he's going to congratulate them. Look at all the people that were coming. It wasn't like, what group are you going to? Let's go over there and see if we can get a few to come over by. You know, there was infractions and, you know, they were splits. They were as, when people say the Jews, they think that's like, you know, it's like saying, well, the Christians. Almost as bad. Pick up a phone book and look in the yellow pages under churches, and there's, like in Knoxville, there's probably 200 of them. Think about here. One town, Panama City Beach. How many feast sites are down here? You know? So, I mean, they were as fractured as we are. But, you know, he really didn't care. I mean, it was like he expected them to be in the right place. He expected them to have the right book. He expected them to be the right people. You don't get honor and praise for that. It's like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and they got a sign up on the door that says no shirt, no shoes, no service, they don't come up and say, oh, I'm so glad you have your shoes on, sir. Oh, this is just wonderful that you have shoes. Now we can serve you. I mean, I'm sure that they're happy that you have shoes on so they don't have to throw you out and say, I'm sorry, sir, the insurance regulations or, you know, all the customers don't want to see your dirty feet or whatever the reasoning is. Sometimes we think that we should get an attaboy because we're doing what we're supposed to. What does he care about? What's in their heart? Yeah, they were there at the right day, they were there at the right time, they had the right book. They didn't argue over the meanings of the Hebrew. Well, I suppose they did. You know, well, in Hebrew it means this, you know. Someday you'll understand. They all spoke it. They missed it. The things that we argue over to try and get to the point where they were, they already had. They missed it. He cared what was in their heart. You can fool the people by the way you look. You know, I put a tie on because you're supposed to have a tie when you're up here speaking. I brought my coat along, but I was sweating up a storm back there before. You know, it's now a little bit cooler now that I'm not really doing anything, but I had a little fan going. You know, I'm sorry, you know, if I didn't fit the picture of what somebody wanted to see. I shouldn't be offensive to try and none of us should be offensive to try and be offensive just for the sake of being offensive. You know, put some deodorant on before you show up, or, you know, if you don't like, you know, the toxins in the deodorant, the aluminum salts, you know, get a deodorant stick or something so you don't stink for the person next to you. But God doesn't care. He don't care if you took a shower that morning. That's good if you did. But if you were running behind because the kids needed your attention, and you just had to grab the kids and get here to make it on time so that you're going to have to take a shower tonight or tomorrow morning, whatever. What's in your heart? Did you whack the kids and smack them before you showed up because you were late to services? Did you cuss your wife out on the way over here because you lost your temper? And now then everybody's going to smile because we're in church? What's in your heart? It's not too late. You know, this is the first day we're supposed to rejoice, we're supposed to celebrate. This is a love story between us and our Father. We're waiting for the bridegroom to come and get us. Instead of appearing outwardly righteous, We need to, each one of us, and this is something that you have to do for yourself. The husband can't do it for the wife can't do it for the husband. The parents can guide and direct and help the children. You can go to your wife and say, or your husband and say, you know, be honest with me, I need some help. You know, they know you better than anybody. But you gotta do it for yourself. You gotta get down on your knees and you gotta ask for help for yourself. That's what's called true repentance. Start with your heart. The rest will take care of itself. People will see a change in you if you start with yourself and you open up your heart. And you know that's the one thing that he wants the most. You can't buy. You can give three times. You can't buy it. Just because you're an important person, or you think you're an important person, or you're indispensable, or, you know, the kids couldn't live without you, or your husband or your wife couldn't, you know. All of that is good, and it's expected, and we've all been granted a responsibility to take care of things that really belong to God in the first place. But the one thing he wants the most out of us is something that only we can give. You know, when you're romancing your spouse and you're trying to win the heart, that's what he's doing with us. That's what he did with Israel out in the wilderness. That's what he was doing with Adam and Eve as he's walking in the garden in the cool of the day with them. And if we can think about that while we're down here, take it to heart and really get serious about it and ask for help. Ask for help from your spouse or your parents. But most important of all, ask for help from God. Like David, you know, wash me. Clean me. What? Think about if that really would happen and you would go home. You don't have to tell anybody. I guarantee you people are going to be saying, what happened? Maybe at first they're just going to sit back and watch and think, wow, it's another one of those phases they're going through. It'll never last. We know better. But let's try and make this a turning point in our lives. I'm going to stop beating it like a dead horse, but that is what he wants the most. And then the things about the sins that we do and when we screw up and we mess it up and all the other things, he puts those off. We'll get to that. Yeah, that's there. That's recorded. That's for us. That's to see that they made mistakes, that he can forgive, how he reacts and how he wants us to live, how you pick yourself up and you go on from there. But the message that he has when he starts out with his people and he gets them out for the honeymoon is he's going to dwell with them. He's going to live with them. He's going to spend time with them. Give my little granddaughter, she says, Grandpa, can you spend time with me? That's what she wants to know. She says, can you spend time with me? You ever think about when you get down on your knees and after you get through, I'm sorry and please give me, how's your day going today? You think you had a bad day? How'd you like to be him? You think your kids are giving you a hard time? You think your spouse is giving you a hard time? We're created in his image. Some of the same emotions and frustrations. Don't think he doesn't get mad. He does. All you got to do is read. Don't think his heart doesn't break. It does. All you got to do is read. Let's have a good time. Let's celebrate. And let's clean yourselves up from the inside out. Thank you.